Hi, everyone. This is welcome to our Hand in Hand Parenting's teleseminar on starting school, how to stay connected as you start or return to school. And we're here with a bunch of parents. We have 300 and something people registered for this call. So there's a few here now, and I imagine some of you will be listening to this on the recording when we send it out. So it's lovely to have you all here. My name is Madeline, and I'm in Sydney, Australia, and I'm here with my colleague Christian, who's in Denver in the US. And we'll introduce ourselves a little bit more later. Kristen, just before we get further, what button do I need to press, can you remember, to put everyone on mute?
I think it's star two.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, actually, no, it's on the screen. I'm sorry, on the screen of the computer, there should be something that says lecture mode. That's what it is. Star two is to raise your hand.
Okay.
There's a lecture mode that you should be doing.
Good. Done. Sorry, everyone. Great. So we'll introduce ourselves a little bit later. But while people arrive, we want to just, so that no one misses the guts of what it is we've got to say here, we just want to do a little bit of an introduction to hand-in-hand parenting, just in case you don't know us all that well, and a brief outline of parenting by connection, which is the approach that Hand in Hand offers, and then we'll talk a bit about what's going on for children as they start school and why this is happening, and offer you some information about how you can use this parenting approach to help. And at the end, we'll make sure there's some time for questions. So just to briefly introduce Hand in Hand, it's a not-for-profit organisation which was founded in 1989 by Patty Whipler, who's now the program director. It's based in Palo Alto in the US, but has an increasingly international reach, and you'll find instructors in many countries of the world with whom you can connect in person, which I highly recommend. And you'll find information about them on the Hand in Hand Parenting website, which is an absolute treasure trove of resources for parents. It's definitely worth a look if you haven't already been there. So Hand in Hand offers marvellous resources online and by phone as well, and we'll talk a bit more about that later. Hand in Hand's mission is to support parents and provide them with insights and really practical skills that you need in order to listen and connect with your children in a way that allows each of your children to thrive and gives you the support that you need. We want you to be able to put your head on the pillow at night and feel satisfied and say, well, I did my best, it worked okay, and I had help doing it. So that's our mission. And what we teach is an approach called parenting by connection. It's an approach that has a lot to offer us as we're kind of tackling this business of starting school, and understanding about challenges with learning. So it's based on the following understandings: that children, and in fact all human beings, have a really deep and abiding need for connection. And we learn well, we make friends, and we can roll with the punches if we feel connected. And that, secondly, for all of us, stressful experiences accumulate, and they fill up what we like to call our emotional backpack, and this tends to weigh us down. And these stressful experiences can have just happened, or they could have happened in the week before, or they could have happened quite a long time ago, way back early in a child's life or early in our own life. And when those stressful experiences accumulate. Thirdly, children at this point will tend to lose their sense of connection. And when that happens, they can't think well, they can't problem solve, they can't make friends easily, and their behaviour goes what we like to call off track. And in fact, those sort of troublesome, unworkable behaviours are a signal that your child needs help. Someone I was talking to recently coined the phrase, which I thought was fantastic, which was, don't reprimand, lend a hand. So we're wanting to give you tools to help you lend the hand to your children. And when young ones go off track, they need us to reconnect with them, and we teach several listening tools that will allow you to do this really effectively. Either, you know, you can build them into your routine, but you can also use them as sort of as emergency triage in emotional emergencies when things have gone off the rails. And when we offer connection, either that's enough to restore our children to good functioning, or they may begin a process of emotional healing, which is what allows them to release the stored, pent-up emotional tensions that they've accumulated. And crying releases sadness, tantrums release frustrations, and there are other kinds of emotional release also, which we'll talk about a bit more through this teleseminar. And there are listening tools that we teach which will help with that process. And lastly, parenting is challenging and parents need support. The transition to school can be as challenging for us as it is for our children. And we need to build, and we can build, networks of support around ourselves which will help us through everyday parenting, but also through times of big transition and change. And school for most families, starting school for most families qualifies as that. And I've met many for whom just returning to school is something that needs, is a transition that needs to be paid some attention to. So what we're going to offer you here is a summary of what happens when a child starts school, the kinds of anxieties and challenges they face when they're starting and returning to school, what happens for us as grown-ups at this time, and why it might be challenging for us, why this happens, a little outline of how our brains work and why connection is important in terms of brain function, the special role that we have as parents in this process, which is to help build and maintain a child's sense of connection. And we want to give you some really practical tools for how to do this. We'll talk about the adult-child listening tool of special time. And we'll talk about, which is fantastic for building and reconnecting. And we'll talk about how important it is to expect upsets and listen to feelings. And we'll talk a little about stay listening, which is another adult-to-child listening tool, which is how you might do that. And sort of what we want you to take out of this teleseminar is a sense of how school is hard on kids. It's harder than we think, I think, often. It can be hard on us. This can be a pressured and tense time for us, and we may not find it all that easy to help our children with the separations or the homework struggles or the social challenges that they're up against. And we may have feelings about starting school or our own memories of being at school or learning things which get in the way of providing our children with the support they really need. And there are good reasons for this, and we'll talk a bit about why this happens. Your special role in filling your child's cup of connection with a strong sense of connection, children are resilient and able to learn and make friends. And that upsets are part of the learning process, especially in a transition time like this. And you can expect a child, that your child will find opportunities to be upset. And you can plan for them. And it helps not to be sort of blindsided by what are actually very predictable upsets that children will have through this time. You can confidently listen to them. They'll be able to think better on the other side of the upsets and have things go well. So just briefly, I'm Madeline. I'm the parent of an 11-year-old, and I live with her and our cat and my husband now in a house that we moved into 2 days ago. And I'm in Sydney. And I got introduced to Parenting by Connection a really long time ago and worked with other people's families, but was really inspired when I had my own daughter and saw how she used the process without having to ever be taught anything about it. And that inspired me to start more actively sharing these tools with other parents. And now I'll hand you over to Kristen, who can introduce herself and talk a bit about what happens when your child starts school.
Yeah, hi, Kristen. Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it. So I am Kristen Volk, and I have two children. My son is 12, and my daughter is 9. And we're in Colorado, in the Denver area. And I came to Parenting by Connection just because I was challenged with parenting. My kids had some early childhood trauma, and my family was just struggling. And so I learned these tools and really fell in love with it and really saw a huge shift in my family. So just also want to add that my son has special needs, and I'm also a single parent, so that just brings kind of extra challenges into parenting, just to let you know that. So whether your child is starting school for the first time or going to a new school or returning to a school, what happens is that our children's anxiety levels typically increase during this period. And in fact, there's research out there that shows that our stress hormone cortisol starts to increase long before children start school. In fact, even as much as 6 months before they start school. So it's a very trying period. So there are many areas where kids can have considerable anxiety. And the way children work is that, you know, they can't just tell us, hey, I'm really worried about making friends at school. Can we sit down and make a plan to have at least 2 playdates a week over the summer so I can keep my anxiety level down? No, children typically show us their anxiety in their behaviors, and more precisely, their behaviors go off track. So I just want to talk about what some of these anxieties are so that we're aware of them as parents. So there's situational anxieties. There's a new teacher, might be a new school or a new classroom, new students, new people. So children oftentimes think about things like, will people like me? Where are some typical things like, where are the bathrooms? Will I get to eat? Will I like the food? Will my teacher be nice? What are the rules? Will I be dressed okay? What will I do all day in this place? Will I have fun? Will there be toys there for me to play with? Will I find someone to play with? Will I get to play, or do I feel safe? So really basic needs of kids. And then there's also the separation anxiety. So children, especially young children, will have feelings about leaving us and about where they're going. So for the most part, kids want to be with us when they're young. So it's natural for a child to feel separation anxiety. They're dependent on us, and they feel the safest with us. So going someplace where the amount of attention that adults can give is limited can be scary for a child. And children's brains are hardwired to connect with caring adults. So when there isn't enough attention to go around by the high child-to-adult ratios, this can be challenging for a child. A child's brain development is dependent on connection with a caring adult. So it's easy for us to think that our clingy child is being a pain when they don't want to go to school or they're feeling separation anxiety, especially with a school that they like. And this can really bring up feelings for us, like why doesn't my child just grow up or get over it already, or you have to be kidding me. having a caring adult to listen to our adult feelings without judgment can go a long way to helping us open up some space for patience and listening and supporting of our child. So when we can approach our child from an open space like that, it really helps a lot to support our child in moving through his or her tensions about starting a new school. And there's actually a teleseminar dedicated to separation anxiety next month that can be very valuable for you to listen to through hand in hand. There's also social anxiety. So children have all kinds of concerns about being accepted. Will other kids play with me? Will I like anyone? Will my old friends still play with me? Children are dependent on adults, so who will take care of me? Will they like me? Will I like that person? Children don't know how things work in a different environment. What if everyone takes all the toys and I have nothing to play with? And many children have unique challenges like food allergies or sensory processing issues or executive functioning deficits or attention challenges. Children are all developing at a different pace, and for some children, learning social cues and reading body language can be quite challenging. You know, will I know what to do, or will I be okay? These are thoughts that kids have, fears that they have, anxieties that they have. And there's also learning and homework anxiety. So not all school environments are conducive to learning. Kids, especially boys, are not meant to sit still in desks all day practicing rote memory. So there can be anxiety about going to a place that doesn't work well with children's natural rhythms. Today, many schools also give out a lot of homework at a very young age. And research shows that this level of homework is not helpful to elementary age children, though it can develop good study habits. And children learn through play and should be spending large chunks of time playing. Some children have a hard time sitting through long lessons of homework, and many children have anxiety about completing their homework or being capable to complete their homework. Will I get it? Will people be nice to me if I don't get it? There's a lot of pressure to be perfect in our society. And I'm sure many of us adults know what that pressure feels like and how it affects our own self-esteem. And teachers and parents also stress about the importance of completing homework, which can be too much for a child to handle. I know I have my own challenges about that. So, and a child's sense of self can be connected to homework and learning challenges, which can be detrimental, especially if that child's developing at a different rate than others in the class. So to go back to what I said in the beginning, a child doesn't have the ability to say, I've had too much stress this week. I just want to snuggle on the couch and wrestle around with you for the next 2 hours. Instead, what usually happens is that stress builds up and shows up as off-track behavior, like pulling their sibling's hair or taking a toy and not returning it, or screaming for juice but then refusing it when you give it to him. Extra clingy or crying behaviors. This is what we're really calling off-track behavior. So when a child doesn't feel connected, that child shows us through these off-track behaviors. So we need to learn how to interpret our own unique child's behaviors. And I just also want to point out, too, that our child's anxieties are exacerbated by several things. So one of those would be like a lack of play and physical movement at school. And what that really means is that because children learn through play, this lack of play means that their basic mode of learning is cut off. Play is also an easy way to make friends, and kids just learn through play, so their brains are built that way. It's really their first language. And the child has little control over their day and lots of correction. So schools tend to be highly regimented, and children are often not allowed much control over what's going on. It's challenging to have this type of experience day after day. And then emotional release is inhibited or redirected. So due to a multiple of reasons, schools don't tend to be comfortable with allowing children's big feelings. When children can offload these big feelings, it really allows for the tensions for the child to be released so that child can learn well and function well. I'm going to talk more about that in a moment from a neuroscience perspective. It's important to note too that teachers are really under-supported. Teachers are often overworked and underpaid. They often have too little support for the challenging work of being with 25 to 30 kids in the classroom. Such a big job. And the lack of emotional support can lead to burnout. So kids can really sense this from their teachers, and it really makes it harder for the teachers to connect with children. So parents are under-supported and undervalued is also something that Madeline mentioned and is important to note. parents are often working and keeping a house and trying to make ends meet. And most families have major life events at some time or another, or multiple life events happening at the same time. Illnesses and surgeries and extensive travel, fighting, divorce, moving, just to name a few. So parents are highly stressed, and this kind of stress is felt by our children. And so I just want to give a quick tip here, too, that what's helpful is for us to really anticipate the beginning of school, that this will create tensions for our child for all the reasons I just talked about. We should really be prepared for these tensions, to know they're happening, and they will be happening for a while. And what we can really do is to feed our child extra connection and to think of this as a connection vitamin for our child to be more preventative and to counteract the tension the child is under. And both Madeline and I are going to share in a moment some ways to feed, that we feed our children these connection vitamins. So now Madeline's going to talk about what happens for us as the parents when our children are starting school.
Thanks, Kristen. You've got some little moral support there by the sound of it. Very cute. I've got boys doing burnouts in my street. So, okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about what happens for us, because our focus can be very, very much on our children at this time. And I haven't met a parent for whom it wasn't big too. One way or another, it can be quite unexpectedly challenging and we have a lot of feelings, or it can be a period where, oh my God, you know, I've got a little bit more space. Either way, there's a lot going on for us as well. And in general, I'd say it's not just our children who are anxious. And in the research that Kristen mentioned earlier, where the researchers tested children's cortisol levels, which are a good indicator of stress levels, they speculated that perhaps part of the problem was that parents were getting anxious at that point, and that was affecting children. But whatever the case, big feelings can come up for us too here. And the thing about parenting is that it reminds us of our own early experiences. And we're not always aware that this is happening. And our children going to school or dealing with any of our child's challenges at school can open up unhealed hurts in our own emotional backpack. And they can show up, sometimes we know, you know, some memory of something will come, you know, bursting into our brain. But sometimes they can just show up as feelings and bodily sensations which affect our thinking and our judgment, but we don't have any sense of actually remembering anything. And scientists call this kind of memory implicit memory. It often doesn't have words that go with it, but it has the, you know, tricky effect of making us think that our current situation is causing the problem. And in fact, the feelings are coming from our own story. And often when I run talks on starting school, I'll get parents to do what we'll talk a bit about later. It's called a listening partnership, where we take turns listening to one another. And whenever I'm doing something on school, I always ask people to take a little listening time around early memories to do with learning anything. And people often report afterwards that they didn't think they had anything to say, but when there was someone listening to them well, they found that there was a lot there that they remembered about their own experience of learning and of school. And sometimes those are positive memories, and sometimes they're loaded with difficult emotions. And either way, they're worth getting out into the open. So when we're having strong feelings about our children's experience at school, our own experiences at their school, dealing with teachers, it's really, really helpful to find another adult to listen to us. We recommend taking it in turns with someone else, get their agreement to listen to you, and it really generally works that everyone needs to be listened to. And relationships go best if we do that fairly. And we can use this listening time, which we call a listening partnership, to help us work through strong feelings. It helps us to untangle where things are actually about us and our story, and may not so much be about what's going on for our child. So we time it, we take turns, and when we're listening, we don't offer judgment or advice or leap in to fix the problem, and we keep it completely confidential. My own start to school was incredibly stressful. I hit the playground and just something extreme happened to me. It was like my nerve ends were on fire. And we had a rough start to school and ended up, in three schools within a couple of years. And, you know, there were things that were wrong with the school environment, but it was pretty clear to me that something was being pulled up by my own experience. And I took it to Listening Partnerships. And I found that sending my daughter to school had pulled up my own experiences of starting school in a foreign country in a language that I didn't understand, where my family was isolated and not well supported. And I'd known that that was part of my story, but I didn't think it was, I can't believe it now, but I didn't think it was that important. But when I looked for what the early, where is this feeling coming from, that's what it pulled up. Now, not everyone's got something as big as that, but we often aren't aware that it's affecting us. So I can recommend Listening Partnerships. You can find out a lot more about those on the Hand in Hand website. And I've written an article called Starting School for Grown-Ups, which talks about my experience and the listening process and how it helped, and there's some links there to more information about Listening Partnerships. So Kristen's going to talk a little about actually what's happening in our brains when that kind of process happens. It happens for us and it happens for our children. So Kristen.
Yeah, thank you so much. So the neuroscience is, I find, fascinating, and it really teaches us that a child's brain is hardwired to connect. The brain is pre-programmed to read our nonverbal signals, and this happens in what's called the limbic brain. So your eyes and your face and your touch and tone of voice and the way you move all tell your child exactly how you feel and whether you're tuned in to what he is saying or she is saying. So, and what a child really needs to know is that we as the parent are available to him or her and attuned, because that child is dependent on us. In fact, his survival depends on our ability to tune into him or her. And so this limbic brain functions sort of like a radar. It's constantly looking to plug into the limbic system of another caring adult to find safety and warmth and care and love and attunement. So once it's plugged in, that child's brain and full intelligence, they're engaged and they go into full gear. It's kind of like green light. Let's all go into full gear. And their brain is developing a maximum number of neural connections. So this is when your child can really learn at its best and think at its best and get along well with others and remember things too. So when connected to you, your child can share and explore and be generous and be that good learner. So in this way, communication with you literally builds your child's intelligence. And our children are constantly looking for a place to plug into limbically that's safe and makes them feel they're good. So this is, from a day-to-day standpoint, you know, this is the time that they're sliding down the slide or they're leaping from the sofa or they're doing somersaults. It's the time that you bend down to see if your child needs help to tie his shoes. These are moments that actually build your child's intelligence. So this kind of limbic connection with adults who love them is really an essential factor in the physical development of a child's brain. In fact, the growth of the brain is dependent on experiencing their relationship with caring adults. So for your child, connecting with you is as important as eating or sleeping. It really puts the child's brain in full gear. It's essential for cognitive development and social flexibility and emotional intelligence. So when children feel close and connected, the limbic brain hums along, the brain is integrated, your child can learn and remember and be adventurous and develop neural connections and think well of others. But when connection breaks, when a child feels threatened or when he's frustrated in his learning or overwhelmed with anxiety, the limbic brain, which really functions like a conductor, sends a signal to the area of the brain that controls reasoning and judgment and planning and attention. This is called the prefrontal cortex. And the signal gets sent to the prefrontal cortex telling it to shut down. So when this happens, your child literally cannot think. So when difficulties come his way, he's going to have a harder time learning or paying attention or controlling his impulse, like sitting still or bothering his neighbor, school, getting along well with others. But when this happens, your child is not bad. He isn't trying to cause trouble. He just needs you so he can think again. So your child is hopefully getting connection at school. But I'm sure there's also many times that connection breaks. It's important to keep this in mind. Connection also breaks at home. We can't give 100% attention 100% of the time. We're going to talk a bit more about what we can do to build up our child's overall sense of connection. But for now, it's just important to recognize that connection does break. You know, a child might get excluded from play, or the door to the classroom gets closed before they get there. The child didn't know the answer to a question, or another child made faces at your child. All these things can break connection. But it's also important to know that children often have early childhood hurts from their early first years of life. So what happens is the body stores these unprocessed emotional memories in such a way that they cannot remember the facts of the hard things that happened. But what they do remember are the feelings and the body sensations. They're still very much available to the child. In fact, small things often trigger these early childhood feelings and body sensations. So much so that a child can feel like they're back in that moment when hard things happened. We call this re-stimulation, and it really happens often. We also refer to this as the emotional backpack. But keep in mind, there's often invisible things in that emotional backpack, too. Things that just come up as feelings and not conscious memories. So when a child is having big feelings of separation anxiety, it might also be feelings of birth trauma or being left alone longer than the child wanted to be, getting lost in a store, for example. Feelings of the past can easily be glommed on to feelings in the present. These feelings in a child's emotional backpack can make it hard at times for the child to function well because it shuts down that prefrontal cortex. So Madeline's going to talk now about how we deal with this. What do we do when our child's not functioning well?
Okay, cool. I know I found it really very useful to understand that idea of the thinking brain and the emotional brain. They're two different things. In the face of this, what I think we parents have a really special role. And sometimes our children really need practical help and information, how to tie up their shoelaces, how to solve the math problem, you know, help with doing their homework. But often, I think, we're in a really very unique position to provide the sense of connection they need in order that they can figure things out for themselves. And that will allow, as Kristen's just outlined, it will allow their limbic system to give the all clear, supplying the feeling that things are safe and that they're loved and appreciated and that help is at hand if they need it. And when our children have this sense, they can learn and problem solve and, you know, cope with whatever challenges are thrown up. So we can pack their backpack with connection before the day starts, and we can repair that connection when they get home and help them to unload the emotional tensions that they've accumulated during the day. And Kristen sort of alluded to this, but we talk about the idea of connect before you correct. And starting school can be seen broadly in those terms, that this is a time where children are getting a lot of what you might think is on the correction end. You know, schools, as Kristen said, quite regimented. And we need to provide the balance when they get at home to make sure we offer extra connection so that we can get their minds in shape to handle the complex environment that school is. And the other thing we need to do is understand that because this time is stressful, children will find pretexts, seemingly small things that they can get really upset about. And like Kristen said, children are not often able to come and grab our hand, get our attention and say, the teacher yelled at me today, or I got teased, or I got upset because I couldn't open my lunch. Lunch can be an incredibly stressful thing for little ones. But they will show us in all sorts of other ways. And I was recently working with a father who came to a talk and said, oh, my daughter's been so grumpy. She keeps getting upset about all sorts of little things and she seems to be struggling with... The thing I remember in particular was he came thinking I was going to give help with how to teach maths, which I couldn't do if I tried. But he said she seems to be struggling with maths homework that I know she could do last year. And after a few questions, I discovered that they'd just moved into town and that she was a few weeks into starting at a new school. And it doesn't surprise me at all that she was struggling, and that things she used to be able to do, she wasn't able to do anymore. I think sometimes as adults we kind of forget how huge those changes can be for young people, just how much new stuff they're trying to make sense of and integrate. And that can result in grumpiness and short tempers and getting upset over odd little things, the colour of their socks, the times tables, the car seat they have to sit in, or refusing to cooperate. They're all what we would call signals or flags, that kites that children send up when they're feeling disconnected and their backpack's full of hard feelings. And at times of transition like this, I think it's really worth planning to pay extra attention. If you can organise to have a little bit extra time, which, you know, may not be that easy and financially may not be easy either, but having a little bit more slack yourself, digging deep for some extra patience and furnishing extra lashings of connection at home and trying to make the time to listen to some upsets when they come up. Every time you manage to listen to one of those upsets about something that doesn't seem to be about anything important, it's actually draining the overall cup of tension and will ease things up often in ways that you're not, you know, that may seem disconnected or won't have anything to do with the particular difficulty. Kristen's going to talk about a listening tool that's one of my absolute favourites called Special Time, and it's especially good for building connection and reconnecting after times when we've been apart. So, Kristen, tell us about Special Time.
Yeah, thank you, and I love Special Time too. So it's really a way to give child a connection vitamin so they don't lose their sense of connection so easily. And it actually gives a child what's called a felt sense of you that they can carry with them. And it gives the child, too, the best frame of mind to function well, get along well with others, and to be adventurous. So this kind of play with relaxed, warm, adult attention really allows children to work through some emotional tensions that they have accumulated at school. And it gives the child a break from being the learner, the littlest, the least knowledgeable. So when kids are in charge, all sorts of learning can happen. It also helps us to reconnect after time apart. And the things children choose to do in special time will also often give us information about what's going on in their day, what's going on in their life when we're not around. And information they often won't tell us when we ask, how was school today? So with special time, what it is, it's a set amount of time you spend with your child doing whatever your child wants to do. You actually use a timer, and I often do special time in 15-minute segments with each child, And it's a one-on-one time, just you and one child. It doesn't have to be 15 minutes. It can be just a few minutes even. I know several people who do special time in the morning before starting their day and getting ready for school just to start the day with good connection happening. And I also find it really interesting that kids today have gotten used to us multitasking as parents. So we play with the kids and then we fold the laundry. We jump up to get a drink of water. We play with the kids, and then we pick up a few toys, and we play with the kids, and we go to stir the soup, or we write a few things on our to-do list. So children don't often get undivided attention from us, but that's what special time is. It's undivided attention when we delight in our child, and our child gets to do whatever they want to do. Yeah, whatever they want to do, within the limits of safety, of course. So it's important also to name it so the child owns the time, so they can count on our attention. And it's also important to name it so the child can ask for it. And what you can learn over time is that your child will bring many things to special time that need your attention and that need your support. And I know an instructor who, just to give you an example of special time, who has a daughter who was learning two languages at school in addition to their English-speaking language. And for special time, she would talk like gibberish to her mother, just la-fli-fli-la-fli-la, and the mother would respond back with more gibberish, and they would go back and forth, completely understanding each other through their body language. Even things like, can I have a paper towel, but saying that in gibberish without using real words. And they would giggle all along the way, thinking of really funny things to gibber at each other, like, help me with a handstand. And it was also funny when they got it wrong. So what the mother soon realized was that the daughter was really exploring all the new sounds and interesting features of these new languages, and like cadence and intonation and different ways that her tongue would work. It really became a favorite game of this mother and child. And the great part is that the child knew intuitively what she needed in order to support herself. And that's how play supports child development. So, Madeline, do you have a special time anecdote that you'd like to share?
Sure. And what I would add in there is that laughter is really helpful, that it's and often in special time, not always, but often in special time, children will find ways of setting up an opportunity to laugh, and it's how young ones are off. In fact, it's probably how we all offload light tensions and embarrassments and light fears. So that's why people tell fart jokes. Well, my story is just I minded my friend's daughter and regularly, and literally from the minute that she started school, she came home in the afternoon and played teacher games as well. She played them all the time, but she was really happy to do them and chose to do them in special time. And it was really clear that she was working through the day. And I could tell a lot about what happened at school that day from what was going on in the game. So she would be the teacher always, and I and the teddy bears got lined up, and we would be doing tests, or we would be getting corrected with red pen, or we would be sent to the naughty corner. I found those, like, she would never tell me much about the day, but I found those little bits of information very helpful, especially the naughty corner one, but anyway. I think we can, it really, really fills a child's cup of connection, special time, and it's worth doing just for that. But you'll get a whole lot of information about what's going on in your child's life and their perspective on things. I think I could go on and on about play in general, but I won't. We don't have enough time, and I would like us to have time for people to ask some questions. I would like to talk a little bit just before we wrap up or shift to any questions you guys might have, just to talk about once we've reconnected with our children, what often happens is that what we're doing when we're when we're doing special time with a child is we're building emotional safety into our relationship with our child. And what happens when that happens is that they will start to show us places where they're struggling and start to show us their upsets. And when they do that, we often struggle to work out how to respond. And what we found in Parenting by Connection is that there's enormous value in allowing a child to actually offload the tears or have the big tantrum. It can be quite challenging for us, and it's one of the reasons why we need to have listening partnerships so that we get to work on how it makes us feel. But once a child's offloaded the tension that they're carrying from the day, they will be able to think better. And I wanted to tell just a little anecdote about picking my friend's boy up from preschool. And he'd just started there for long days, and his mum had just recently returned to work. And so the whole family's routine was turned upside down. And he's usually really cheerful and cooperative and loved being at preschool. But this afternoon when we picked him up, he was really out of sorts. And we strapped everyone into the car seats and headed off, but we hardly got round the corner before he was climbing out of his car seat. And I pulled over, and his mother, she's one of the most patient and reasonable people I know. And so she started to remind him of how important it was to wear his seatbelt. I mean, I'm sure we've all had this struggle. So he's struggling to get out of it. And he just looked straight at her and kept struggling to get his legs out. And had already worked his arms loose. And eventually she gave up trying to reason with him and got out of the car, walked around and opened the door beside him, bent down and just put her hand on his belly and said in this really gentle tone, you know, sweetie, we can't leave until you have your seatbelt on. And he just looked at her and started to wail. And she just stayed with him and looked lovingly at him. And we're all sitting in the car wondering how long is this going to take. But in this instance, I don't think it's always this short, but it only took 5 minutes. Sometimes it only takes a little bit of time, and we worry that letting a child have this upset will just, you know, wreck the whole routine for the day. But after 5 minutes, he petered out. He went and put himself back in the car seat, and we were able to continue on our way. And I think he was just completely backed up with the newness of preschool and the family routine. He knew the rules about being in the car seat. He just wasn't able to comply at that point, and needed her to bring connection. And when she brought connection gently by just setting that limit, you know, we can't leave until you have your seatbelt on, and staying warm and present, he was able to have the cry he needed to have just to get enough off that he could do what needed to be done. And we call this stay listening. So when your child's upset, you can stay close and listen, and you don't have to fix the problem, at least not right at that moment. And at that point, they're prefrontal cortex is offline. It's flooded with feeling. And in fact, reasoning with a child at that point really isn't going to help, because the part of their brain that can make sense of what you're talking to them about just isn't available. So often when we set little limits like that, necessary limits, the upsets that follow, the tears, the tantrums, the stomping around, they're actually the process of releasing the emotional tension that's accumulated. And, you know, a really good cry tantrum can allow a child to do something, accomplish some task that they've been unable to tolerate. Homework's a great example in our household of that, that getting to have a big tantrum about it amazingly can make it possible for my daughter to sit down and actually do it quite happily. Not always, but many times. So, you know, a child may be able to come to some homework task they haven't been able to do. They may be able to get their clothes on the way to school, or they may be able to join everyone for dinner, whereas previously they couldn't sit still to do so. But these upsets will happen, and instead of being surprised by them, we can plan for them. So, Kristen, maybe we'll ask if open it up for questions, do you think? Yep. I'll take that as a yep.
Sorry, I muted for a second.
Yeah, that's okay. What you need to do, if you have a question that you would like to ask, we will do our best to give you some pointers. In order to ask a question, you can, I've got you all on mute because otherwise the background noise is just too much for us to be able to hear each other. But if you have a question, you can press star two now, and I'll unmute you, and we can hear from you. So someone from Oakland, California, I'll unmute you. I think it's Robert. Hello? Hi, Robert. You put your hand up. I've unmuted you. Hello? Oops. Hi, Robert. Are you there? I think he's dropped off. Okay. Are you there, Robert? He keeps... Oh. Robert, are you there? Hi. Someone in Oakland, California who just coughed. Did you have a question? Okay, we'll try someone in Houston, Texas. Siggins?
Hi, we were wondering how shyness is taken into account in this method.
Okay. Kristen, would you like to say something?
You know, I guess I'd love your input on this too, Madeline, but, you know, from my experience, you know, one of the things that we say is that I mean, first of all, I would just say there's nothing wrong with your child, and to really pay attention to your own feelings, kind of some of the stuff that we said in this call. And your child is at where your child's at. So, I mean, this is the way I would really look at it. It's like, okay, this is where my child's at. How do I bring a more adventuresome sort of how do I help my child to be as adventuresome as my child can be, and how to work on, you know, the issues of shyness. So, and there's lots of ways to do that. So when a child is more connected to you through special time, for example, they're going to have a stronger home base, which fills their connection cup, which gives them, more ability to reach out and there's no guarantee what that's going to look like for your child, but it gives them more opportunity to reach out to other children, for example. And so all of our tools could be extremely helpful and supportive of that. But there's also like very specific games that you can play related to shyness, too, and, you know, games around play. And, but then also, I know several parents who have had lots of success with, again, listening to their child, especially, you know, one of our approaches is to, suggest to a shy child, you know, let's go over to these other children and play now. And just that suggestion can be so scary for a child that they can burst into tears. And then you as the parent can listen to the child to really help that child work through, because what they're really doing is facing the fear of going to play with other children. And your attention of listening to that child in that moment can be extremely helpful to them overcoming or moving, working on a chunk that can help them move forward to move forward in that process, basically. That's kind of a short answer. I think it's a big topic, but I think there's a lot that Hand in Hand can offer in that particular area. Do you have something to add to that, Madeline?
If you haven't already found your way to them, there's at least one, and I think probably more than one, really, really helpful article on the Hand in Hand Parenting webpage. I think helping children with shyness, parents have found that really helpful in thinking about what's going on. And like Kristen said, I think it's a fear issue. And we didn't talk about this tool, but play listening can be really helpful when there's a particular issue that a child is struggling with. And in play listening, we make ourselves the one who's got the problem or the least competent, the shyer. So if you can play games where you're shyer than your child or you're more timid than your child around something that they're scared of, they often will be able to laugh. And laughter is just hugely useful in restoring a child's confidence. But that article about helping your shy child and helping children with their fears is another one you'll probably find really useful. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. If you plug the website, the Hand in Hand website is best, I've found, navigated by using the search function. If you plug shyness into the search box, it'll turn up lots of useful resources for you.
Great. I'll take a look at that. Thank you.
Yeah. I've still got, I'm not sure, someone in Oakland, California whose name is up here on my system as Robert Bloom. Are you there? No, I don't know what's going on there. Okay. Does anyone else have a question that they'd like to ask? A moment for you to star two is what you would need to press to let us know. All right, here's another. From Ithaca in New York. Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, yes.
Yes, hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. So my question is, as a parent, when we know that we have anxiety or stress about leaving our child at school or for them starting, and I know the listening partnership can help, but are there suggestions for, you know, how to be in those moments with our child, knowing that our own stress is, you know, clearly visible to our children?
But, you know, our children can tell a huge amount about what's going on for us. Their sort of radar for the nonverbal signals is incredibly sophisticated. So I think you're right. There's really no hiding it. I don't know. It probably doesn't hurt to explain that you're having feelings and that they might be about what happened to you when you went to school and that you'll find a place to talk about it with them, talk about it with someone who can listen to you, and that's a helpful process. Sometimes I've found it useful when I can tell that I'm tense, which then can scare children and my child, is to send myself up. So in any circumstance where you can get laughter going, it will help things no end. So if you can actually over-dramatize your own anxieties, you might want to start this at home rather than in the playground. Depends how embarrassed you want to be. But, you know, you could actually, it's a release for children for us to acknowledge, especially in a way that allows emotional release rather than necessarily talking about it. It's enormous relief for us to acknowledge that we've got stuff going on. So if you could just, you know, get incredibly scared about going into the playground or I don't know, something that just gets you both laughing together may just break the tension around it and ease things up between the two of you. But aside from that, and Kristen may have some suggestions there, but, you know, there's just no getting past the incredible value of setting up a listening partnership with someone and getting regular listening time. I think, you know, around any time when we're heading for a really big, a big change, doing that routinely, even if we feel like we don't have anything to work on, there will be stuff getting in our way of thinking well, and it's worth just taking. I find a really helpful question just to routinely ask. My husband and I actually do this for 5 minutes each way in the morning. If you're doing it with your partner, you need to be a little careful about the topics you choose to talk about. But what was it like for me when my child was this age is a really good question to take to a listening partnership and to do. We found it useful in our relationship with each other. And what will come up when you're taking your kids to school is stuff to do with what it was like for you at school, almost guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you can't really get around that other than getting time to be listened to yourself. Kristen, have you got anything you'd add there?
Yeah, I would just add, I think that was great. I would just add that, you know, sometimes when you talk about over-dramatizing your fear, like I might start shaking, like, ooh, this is scary, ooh, and just shake in a really silly way, shake my whole body, make it silly, gets myself laughing and gets me loosened up. And keeping also in mind that when I'm nervous or scared about something, I can't think as well. So I also kind of my go-tos are to, sounds funny, but like to physical play is not only good for our kids, but it's also good for us as adults too. So one of my go-tos is just to tackle one of my kids in a just really fun, playful way. So like a vigorous snuggle is what Hand in Hand calls that. And I just make some kind of silly comment. And just like, oh, this just makes me want to hug you so hard. And I'll just, you know, hug and tackle and start to wrestle. And I just find that that really not only loosens up my child, but also loosens up me and makes me feel more connected. And so those are kind of, yeah, just some of my go-tos that I use a lot.
Is that helpful?
Yes, it's very helpful, and it actually brought up another quick question. What do you do at the end of the, like, the time with your child if they don't want it to end?
That's everyone's question. You're not alone there. We're getting really, we're actually over time now, but very briefly, I would say that is part of what you want to have happen when you build emotional safety. So it's not actually a bad thing, but it's something to plan for. So if you have 20 minutes, maybe depending on how likely it is that your child will choose to have an upset at the end of special time about it finishing, you might only do 7 minutes of special time and allow yourself some time to listen to the upset that you know will come. And you can trust, it's actually one of those gifts children give us. You can trust that what they're working on is not the end of special time. Although, you know, it might be, but that's really not what's fueling this fire. It's all the other disappointments that have backed up, all the things they didn't get to choose, all the times when you changed the agenda, or, you know, it's a great opportunity when children get upset at the end of special time. We just need to plan for it. And you can safely and confidently listen at that point, knowing that they're doing good work, draining their backpack of all those feelings of disempowerment and, you know, regret that they haven't had a chance to talk about. And generally my experience with parents is that it will, once they've unloaded that backpack a bit and they get a real sense that special time's going to be something they can count on, and there's a lot to be said for making it a regular thing, they do it less. But they may not. Your child may choose to pull up that backpack load every special time. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you so much.
Okay. All right. We better do closing. Would you like to do that part of that or some of that?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds great. So, so part of the hand-in-hand mission is to share parenting by connection with as many parents as possible. So we have more free teleseminars coming up. So please register on our website, and even if you can't attend live, you can get a free playback. And we have lots of other free resources available, including the monthly newsletter and articles and a very inspiring blog with parent success stories based on this approach. And we also have a membership to a free online Yahoo discussion group and supports parents around the world every day. We also offer self-paced, self-guided video classes. And you'll find a class on setting limits, one on sibling rivalry, another on sleep, one on helping kids with aggression, and also on listening partnerships. And we're doing new ones all the time as well. So keep posted on that. And our video classes also will help you apply the Parenting by Connection tools to a specific situation or emotional project that you might be working through. And Hand-in-Hand also has a membership program called the Parent Rescue Series. So for a small monthly fee, you can have access to all the self-guided videos and a monthly question and answer support call with a certified instructor. So if you'd like to have more one-on-one time with an instructor, we also offer private consultations for those times when you need support and tools for big issues. So, and we also offer, we offer so many resources on our website. And Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we depend on your donation to provide free services like this parenting call and scholarships for classes and instructor training as well. It's easy to donate, and any amount will help. So just click on the donate button on the website and give what you can if that's of interest to you. Together, we can really support parents everywhere. And also, we have a 6-week starter class that Hand in Hand offers. An amazing, great, and a great way to get a good introduction to parenting by connection. Madeline has one class starting on the 27th of August for in Pacific time, but that's the 28th of August in Australia. Hmm. And we both have parent intensives too. That is a 10-week program that goes deeper into the tools and more personalized support during that 10-week period. And we both have these parent intensive classes starting soon as well in September. So if you're it says that it's closed, but you can actually still sign up for those classes. You can find those on the website, but just putting parent intensive into the search bar. And I also have an online starter class starting on Wednesday mornings, starting on September 2nd. And I also have lots of starter classes beginning in Denver here in the next few weeks. And I also have a Wednesday evening phone-based support group. So it's basically listening partnership time every Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock Pacific time. It's an ongoing group that you can come and go as you please. And I also have a back-to-school support program, too. So it's 1 month at a time, or you can do 3 months at a time, too. And it includes weekly consultations as well as phone-based support group, too. So you can find all of this information on Hand in Hand's website, and you can also search for Madeline or myself on the Hand in Hand website, too, to contact us directly. Madeline.
Put in a plug for the teleseminar, which is coming up on September the 10th US or the 11th here in Australia. It's Georgie Bancroft and Lyra Lestrange, my Australian colleagues, and it's about separation. So it's probably something that you guys will find really helpful. Cool. All right. We should wrap up this call. We're a bit over time. So thank you so much for coming today. It was lovely to spend time with you. if you didn't get your question answered just because we were short of time, feel free to contact one of us. And we hope you've enjoyed the teleseminar on starting school and found some things useful. It's been good to be here with you. Thank you, Kristen, for doing this. It was fun.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
okay, thank
everyone.
Thank you for all your hard work, too, of parenting. So
yeah.
Important.
Yeah, thank you for making the time to get resource around a time in your life where there may actually feel like there's less time. So it's a key thing in parenting that we get so isolated and we feel like it's all our problem, and to reach out and connect and get help and resources a huge thing. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Okay.
Hey,
you'll get a recording of this and we'll might see you at the next one. Bye.
Madeline, are you still on the phone?
I am. Hang on, and I'll just... If I drop all...
So...
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key.